Brace yourself, dear friends, for it is time, once again, to be dainty as hell. Our charity ball will return to the Baker Street Irregulars weekend in 2018 with a rather spooky theme. Save the date to join us for some fundraising and shenanigans on the moor. Location is still to be announced, but the latest regeneration of our charity ball will be on Thursday, January 11th. Last year at BSI Weekend, we raised $5,000 and 100% of the proceeds from the ball benefited the Disabled American Veterans Trust. That brought our five-year total to an amazing $31,000 raised for disabled and wounded veterans. If you have any Sherlockian memorabilia, arts, crafts, books, literally anything that you'd like to donate to our auction, please email lindsay@bakersheetbabes.com. That's Lindsay with a Y, so lindsay@bakersheetbabes.com. We're always looking for wonderful things for our goodie bags and raffles as well, so please feel free to approach us with whatever you have. It all goes to wounded veterans. You can't lose. But all contributions need to be with us by Christmas due to the craziness of the Postal Service at the holiday season, especially in New York. If you have any questions, you can please direct them to Lindsay or us on Twitter at BakerSTBabes. Thanks so much.
We've recently released our essay collection called Femme Friday, which comprises 33 essays celebrating the women in the Sherlock Holmes canon and beyond. The essays have been written by the babes and several of our female listeners. The book comes with several illustrations, which is why we released two versions of the book. One is simply black and white, and then we have a luxury edition with color images. You can purchase the book on either lulu.com for the European market or blurb.com for the US.
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1 be mine?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Baker Street Babes. We are talking with Chuck Kovacic. Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are. It took me 6 years to figure out the correct pronunciation, and you get it on the first try.
I'm so glad. Chuck Kovacic is the fascinating creator in Los Angeles of a virtual 221B Baker Street. And it's not merely virtual. It is also physical. So you can go there. You can, you know, wander around in it, I think, theoretically. And he is now launching a project wherein people can visit it online. And it is detailed in every possible good way. And welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you so very much, ladies. Yes, it is virtual. It is a reality. It is physical. You can come and visit the room. The room itself is about 3/4 the size of what the actual sitting room would have been in Holmes's day.
You've actually, like, parsed this out, which is awesome. You're like, it's not quite 100%. It's like 78.
I'd say that's pretty close to the actual size. It is about 78% of the actual size of a sitting room for the period.
So we have a few questions that we have to ask you.
Go right ahead. Yes, I'm a qualified co-signer.
Okay, so how did you come to Sherlock Holmes in the first place?
That was kind of an interesting journey. I came out to California in the early 80s, and I started doing a lot of corporate events, corporate presentations. And one of the characters that kept popping up was Sherlock Holmes. Now, because I have a background in advertising as an art director, a lot of the clients that I have begun to deal with, they like the idea of team building activities, of coming up with solutions to their marketing challenges and plans. I started talking about Sherlock Holmes as being a person that could help unravel the mysteries confronting the corporation's plans or their products or their employees. And team building.
So you were using it in an actual physical, like, business sense.
Yes.
It's very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I would escort groups of people on tours, sometimes on trains. I did a number of programs on cruise ships and really enjoyed them.
What is your favorite case from the canon?
Well, we all have favorites, but I think one of my favorites is the Musgrave Ritual. Because
nice.
That story talks about the different contents of the room, and it famously opens up with the scene of the creation of the VR with Holmes with his pistol. And I have tried mightily sorting out the reality of the VR. People come to the room and they say, "Where is the VR? I don't see the VR." And I have tried reconciling whether or not it is physically possible to create a VR.
Out of bullets.
No, actually, I tried sorting this out because I've done quite a bit of study, not just on the sitting room, but the townhouse itself. And I tried sorting out which wall the VR would have been on. And once you sit in the sitting room and you start contemplating this, you realize, well, Holmes couldn't be shooting at the street. One of the bullets could have gone easily misfired out the window, so can't use that wall, the exterior wall.
Right.
That leaves you with the interior wall that leads to the inside of the townhouse in the hallway. Again, a misfire could send it through the doorway or through the wall.
Right.
So we really can't use that wall. That leaves the two interior party walls that are shared with the other townhouses. So you couldn't really shoot at the wall that has the fireplace with the overmantel and mirror and the chemist table, because if you did, you could have breakage of elements. That leaves the opposing wall, the party wall.
Right.
And if you look at the construction of the wall, you have masonry, you have studs, which would have been the equivalent of 2x4s, over which you would have had plaster and lath, and over the plaster and lath, you would have had wallpaper and paint. Now then, you're sitting about 15 feet away, Holmes, with his pistol, shooting at the wall, and it's mentioned he used a box of cartridges. Cartridges came 20 and 50 to a box, depending on what purchased. And let's hope that you have a steady enough hand to create a definable, recognizable VR. Okay.
Right.
Now then.
Which actually is not backed up in the rest of the canon because he seems not to be a very good shot.
No. So this is kind of astounding.
But we have to continue to ask you various questions.
Yes, because there are other letters in the alphabet other than a V and an R.
Well, yes, there are.
I'm not going to get involved with the semicolons.
You know what?
What has shredded the wall is my point, with the ricochets bouncing off the masonry and back through. So anyway, you would have had a kind of a shredded mess. Anyway, there you are.
Yeah, I don't think that it would be possible for Sherlock Holmes to have enacted that particular exercise.
Well, I haven't been able to figure out how to do it, but that doesn't mean anything either. But what's your next question?
Who is your favorite canonical character?
Boy, now that's...
And we know it's not fair. But that's why
you asked it. Mm-hmm. I guess I very much like Lestrade because I think he's kind of the official representative that is always being presented. He's kind of a bridge, a legal bridge in a way that is frequently brought in, a representative of the city imposing itself. So I always find those interactions.
Like Lestrade is London in a sense.
Yes.
That's a really cool thing that no one's ever brought up here.
it's the bureaucracy imposing itself. It's
at the same time that he really appreciates Sherlock Holmes. That's a really cool, you know, analysis.
Well, I think grudgingly he does and he must. And I think there is that admiration that Holmes can do things that he cannot. And I don't mean in terms of talent and ability. I mean in terms of procedure, that Holmes can go off to investigate things that Lestrade just wouldn't be allowed to. So I find that a very interesting nuanced character.
Best character. I love all mentions of Lestrade, so thank you. And finally, after you have run this gauntlet, you will be completely done with our random questions.
Oh my gosh. Oh, well, choose carefully, I guess. Okay.
So this is a completely different question from who's your favorite canonical character. Who would you most like to sit down and have tea with from the Sherlock Holmes canon?
Aha, Mrs. Hudson.
That's the right answer.
She'd be able to serve me properly. You know, she has a lot of practice in that. Mrs. Hudson, because I'd want to talk to her about how the rooms were furnished. I would want to talk about her husband. We know it was her primary inheritance from his estate. I'd want to know how long was left on the leasehold to the property. I want to know, were the apartments lent fully furnished? Where did she get the furnishings? Were they her husband's furnishings? Were they
their furnishings while they were married, and did they live in those quarters? You know, were they
exactly? Did they live downstairs or on the upper floors? Was that always a rental unit for additional income?
So funny because, like, I live in New York, and it's so weird because, like, this is always a conversation. Do you have a space that you could possibly rent out?
Yes, I'm going to be visiting in 2 weeks, and I need a place.
Yeah.
You know, everyone who answers Mrs. Hudson always answers Mrs. Hudson because she would overhear what's going on with Holmes and Watson. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say Mrs. Hudson because they actually want to have a conversation about her.
About her. Yeah, thank you. That is so great.
She would have that unique perspective because as I've tried sorting out the inventory of the room and how the furnishings are placed in the room, why were they placed that way, you realize that Holmes wouldn't necessarily have been interested in a lot of these decisions. I can't imagine him going out and saying, oh, I need a pair of club chairs. I just can't imagine it. But Mrs. Hudson would have had those things. She would have been the one that had been picking up the linens and doing the laundry. You know, what kind of laundry? Did he like his shirt starched? Did she provide that service? The meals, what were the different menus?
Does say that she makes a pretty fantastic curry, so which is the quintessential British dish.
those are the questions that I'd be asking her, and would be very interested to hear.
You having answered all of these questions that we put to you without your foreknowledge, you are an honorary Baker Street babe.
Yay! I feel more fulfilled and more complete now. This is a great thing. Thank you so very much.
Well, it's our pleasure. But thank you for answering the questions. So first of all, we should talk about what the original project, involved in terms of putting the room together. And then we will talk about the web launch of Everyone Can Visit This and It's Awesome. First of all, how did you start doing this project?
The room itself came about years ago when I started doing Sherlock Holmes for those corporate events. The guests wanted to know all the details. And I had always had a preference for antique furnishings and clothing of the period. And what I always tell people is that when you buy furniture for your home or apartment, buy antiques as opposed to new furniture, because in 5 years' time, you'll still have an antique as opposed to used furniture. I had a preference for Victorian furniture. And as I collected it, I thought at one time I'd put together a Victorian sitting room. And it kind of overlapped with the work that I was doing as Holmes. And I thought, I'll make it a Sherlockian sitting room. So this is the second incarnation of the sitting room that I've done over the years. It's in my home here in Los Angeles. And I've put together the furnishings. I've put together the props, and I've started documenting it with the photography and putting it on the website and soon a Facebook page. So that's the arc of it.
Moving into the 3D project, like, how did you have to alter that?
I came across this 360 degree filming process, and it is a filming process. The camera itself is about the size of a cigar box. It sits up on a tripod that's about 2 feet high. And the technicians set it up in the room, and it scans the entire room in a little under a minute. And it does it 360 degrees.
That's pretty cool.
The camera is then repositioned at several different points in the room. So that when all this is completed, when you bring the image up on your screen, and it works great on phones, tablets, laptops, standard computer monitors, there's no download time or any learning curve with it. It's hosted on the cloud. It's very intuitive. You bring up a floor plan of the sitting room. And depending on where you touch your mouse or cursor or arrow keys, you can literally walk into the room, any part of the room that you want, and you're standing right there. And you can look up at the ceiling, you can spin yourself around, you can look at objects on the floor, you can tap on the cursor or the mouse, and you can lean in to look at a specific detail, and we've placed about 10 dots, 10 tiny blue dots, that when you click on those, it will bring up a reference number. For example, number one, fireplace mantle. And there'll be a corresponding text box on the website that will detail the inventory of the fireplace mantle. So you'll get a virtual tour. And something that I'm particularly excited about is that this system is adapted for the new generation of cell phones. It will be possible with one of the Oculus devices. Put your phone in that, you'll be able to take 360, almost three-dimensional tour of the sitting room.
Was it important to you that younger Sherlockians be able to access this?
Well, it's important to me that all Sherlockians, regardless of age, be able to access to it. But
if they can't get to Los Angeles, they can still get to it online.
And I think you're right when you say, you know, the younger Sherlockians, because...
Well, we don't always have all the money.
No. I have to say I am of an age, regrettably, where everybody's younger than me. So.
You're probably fine.
I like to
think
so.
I've seen your picture. You have nice skin.
Well, I do what I can. I don't spend a lot of time in the sun.
But it's an important question because some of the Sherlockian activities that are, you know, widely proselytized are financially impossible for people of a certain age.
Well, I mean, you know, people, when they go to London, of course, they want to see the two sitting rooms there.
When they go to London, I mean, they don't always go to London.
No, that's
which
a good point.
Which is one of the reasons that I think that this is a really cool project.
Well, and your room is one of only, is it seven in the world that are recreations of 221B?
Those are the ones that I have found. There's the two in London, the two in Switzerland. There's one in Kobe, Japan. There's one in Pennsylvania, one here. And my definition of what those sitting rooms are is quite simple, because I'll have people come to me all the time and say, well, I have a Sherlockian sitting room. I don't understand what is so unique about this. And I'll say, well, number one, it can't be used as a spare bedroom. Number two, it can't be used as a room to watch television in. It is simply devoted to Sherlock Holmes as a sitting room at 221B. No other utility. That's it. So that's a very rare thing to find. I know a lot of Sherlockians that will have a corner that they've set up, and they have a lot of fun with that. But this is something that is all-encompassing. And when you actually have an opportunity to sit in one of those rooms, the stories start becoming illuminated in ways that the text can't even begin to explain. So having a virtual reality presentation, a 360-degree presentation that young people of any age that are devoted Sherlockians, that they can go and visit, I'm kind of excited about. And I hope that the people that visit it get excited about it.
That's awesome. And I also read on some information from your site that you have over 300 rare items and furnishings. Would you like to tell us about some of your favorite items that you have in the room?
There were some very, very challenging items to find. And it all gets down to the basic thought, how far down the rabbit hole do you want to go? Let me begin by saying that American Victorian design and English Victorian design are different. So,
yes, I can vouch for that.
Yeah. And when collecting those furnishings, you have to decide, well, this might be a sideboard from 1880 or a chair from 1885, but it's got the wrong design. It's not English. The next part of that is all the little props, all the little tobacco tins, all the books, all the papers. You can have all that be Victorian, but when you step into BSLA, they're all stamped London. And some of those items were very difficult to find. An Alpine stock sounds very simple. I couldn't find one in two trips to Switzerland. I found it at an antique mall in Ohio. New. It's on the wall with four prints of the Rockenbach Falls that I found in Paris. One of those prints is the print that was enlarged for the Jeremy Brett series that hung over the fireplace mantel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was able to definitively unravel what a gasogen is versus a celsogen. The Bering Gould, I think with the information that they had, they misidentified it as a celsogen. And I was able to find both items, and I was able to find a pamphlet from France that was printed in, I think, 1855, that was basically an owner's manual for a gasogen. That was a great find. But there were two, out of all these items, two very unique and rare things that are often overlooked. One was an item that was issued to me as a challenge from Les Klinger. And Les had been telling me that as he was doing the annotated Sherlock Holmes books, that his most useful tool was an encyclopedia of the period. Well, try to find an encyclopedia of the period, and it has to be English. And it took me years, but I found one. Of all places, at that same antique mall in Ohio.
Hey, sure, you guys heard it here first. If you're looking for rare Sherlockian antiques,
go to Ohio.
That antique mall in Ohio.
Go to Ohio. And that encyclopedia was for a publisher in Edinburgh, printed in London, 1906. And the notes in there for phraseology, for different items that are mentioned in the canon, has proved to be invaluable because terminology has changed.
So it's very important to you to have the correct items, not the items people expect. The ones that actually would have been there.
Yes.
Because you've done your research.
Yeah, the more layers of reality that you can offer to the setting, the more of an immersive experience it can be. I was telling your associate, Tiffany Knight, the thing that kind of kicked this off was the startling scene in Time After Time, where Christopher Reeve reaches into his pocket and the spell is broken when he pulls out a modern penny. Mm. And he's propelled back to the modern day. And so as much as possible, when people open the drawers of the desk, I've had to answer, what would have been in a Victorian desk? Did they have paper clips? Did they have thumbtacks? What were the pencils like? Did they have erasers? What were those erasers like? What was the ink like? What were the stamp pads like? You go to the table, the dining table in the room, and that's fairly easy to figure out. You had dishes, you had nice little teacups and things, but it's on that table that I have perhaps the rarest item in the entire room that people almost always overlook. I have two forks and two knives, pearl handles. They date from about 1880, and incredibly, on the handle is monogrammed an SH.
Oh, that's exciting.
I was able to find those at a flea market in London, the old Bermondsey market that regrettably is gone now.
That's badass.
It's the fun of going in, and I have some pretty hardcore Sherlockians that show up, and they're looking for these details.
Well, when you say hardcore Sherlockians, I'm curious, who comes to this mecca, this, you know, Sherlockian 221B shrine? Who do you generally get? To continue the question, who do you expect to get now that it is online and available for people who can't afford plane travel? Because that's awesome, too.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you get now, and who do you expect to get in the future?
I get quite a cross-section of people that come here. Sometimes because they're interested in Sherlock Holmes. Other times they have no interest in Sherlock Holmes. They're interested in the decor of the period. that's their entry point, and they want to see the sitting room. I've had, being located here near Hollywood, I've had animators come in that are looking to see what a Victorian interior looks like that they can use as backgrounds. We've had people come in here to do commercial shoots. A while back, we had the Tennis Channel here that were doing promos for Wimbledon, because nothing says Wimbledon like Sherlock Holmes. But it was a connection that they made because they wanted Holmes to figure out the mystery of who was going to win the tournament. So they wanted to shoot this in the sitting room, which was great. We had another good friend, Amanda Raymond, who attends all the Comic Cons as Molly Dove, a Sherlockian character that she has created. And she came with a film crew to film a intro pitch to potential publishers. So we get those groups of people. I'll get friends who are costumers who don't particularly have an interest in Holmes, but they come to the room because they want an authentic backdrop setting so they can take costume pictures. Now, along with those folks, of course, I get dedicated Sherlockians, and occasionally I'll get somebody who is trying to put together their own room or a dedicated wall, and they can begin to see how to put those components together. And I guess that's the real thing that I keep hoping for, that people who might be inspired to do just a wall or a corner in their own home could visit this room and see how the various components are put together so that they could do it for themselves.
I'm so sorry. I was just going to insert. I understand that you associate with other Sherlockians who have this same interest in the Baker Street Builders, and it sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about, is other people who share this enthusiasm for the sitting room and the furnishings.
Yes. A number of years ago, I started a Scion society called the Baker Street Builders, and it is limited to people who are interested solely in the sitting room. I would occasionally go to New York, and our Scion pin is a hammer, and on the handle it says Baker Street Builders. And anybody can have one of the pins, one of the silver pins. But of course, all the collectors wanted one of the gold pins. And I said, no, the only way to get a gold pin is if you recreate a room, a sitting room.
Oh, so there's like a hierarchy of,
yes,
of accuracy.
Yes. And so far,
really? That's interesting.
I've handed out only 5 gold hammers to people.
And, gold hammers.
Gold hammers. Because what better way to build a sitting room? You got to have a hammer.
Yeah. I mean, and I want one of those now. I didn't know I wanted one, but now I do.
You can have the gold-plated pliers as well. To complete.
Okay. So you have created actually like a system wherein people have accurately or inaccurately recreated 221B, and you kind of say yes or no.
Well, it gets down to that criteria. How far down the rabbit hole do you want to go?
Right.
And I realize that, you know, I was very, very fortunate. I have an understanding spouse. I had the extra bedroom that I could do this in. A lot of people don't have that extra room. It's a bit of an extravagance, and I understand that.
It's not a bit of an extravagance. It is.
It's a giant extravagance.
It's a huge, massive extravagance. Well, which is like the reason that it's cool that it is going online, so that people can visit it, whether, you know, they can be in the proximity of the actual physical room or not.
I think anybody who's a dedicated Sherlockian has a corner or a wall.
They don't.
That they what? Well, who do you go to visit? I mean, just about every Sherlockian I go to has a little collector's corner.
no, they don't. And that's why your 3D virtual version, I think, is so cool. Because
I do. Yeah, I like the kind of analogy here, though, the idea that the room is almost like a visual library. It's a library of items and objects, and it's a library of atmosphere. So it's for Sherlockians, a lot of younger Sherlockians, I think what Lindsay's getting at is that a lot of us don't have the money to have those, even a corner, but we do have a virtual world. We have a curated virtual library of books that we have or sites that we visit. And to have the room physically is like a physical library of visual art and objects, but to have it online is another addition to that virtual library, I think, that so many younger Sherlockians have, because they can't afford that physical collection, but we can curate what we read and what we look at online, and this is such a great addition to that.
Well, I certainly hope that becomes the case. But
it's very cool that you are able to share it with the rest of the world, because I think that that's part of the, you know, this is a really awesome launch. It's like, oh, you can wander around a replica of 221B and just feel like you're there.
And, you know, the rooms, each of the rooms that we mentioned in London and Switzerland and the other room in Pennsylvania, each of the rooms are different. If you go to the room in Meiringen, it's incredibly well appointed. It's like you were visiting a Victorian sitting room recreation at the Metropolitan Museum. And years ago, on a visit to Meiringen, I had the great good fortune to meet the widow of the creator of that room. And what makes that room so different from the other rooms is that they were able to go out to the auction houses of London, and they had an unlimited budget. They were both decorators. So that room has a level of polish that is different than the other rooms. They had an unlimited budget. You go to the room at the Sherlock Holmes restaurant and pub, that's kind of a truncated version from the Festival of London. They've kept a corner of the room to give you a sense of what it was like. You go to the room on Baker Street, it's in an actual townhouse. So you get to see the physicality of the townhouse and how it imposed its architectural will on the sitting room. And then you go to my room, which is just the room itself, and just that sitting room and how I've interpreted it with the way I've decorated it and the way I've put it together based on my readings of the decor of the period. I come from a design background. That's what my degree is in.
What's the best one you've seen?
The best one that I've seen was in the Brett series. It was the most accurate.
This is the sound of nobody being surprised.
Yeah. We're all like, not surprised.
Yes, correct.
the only fault that I had with that room was that the chemist table was placed in the back by the pocket doors that led into the bedroom. It would have been very unpractical to have a chemist table there. I've determined that it would have gone between the fireplace and the front window for the very practical reason that if you're working on a chemical experiment and it goes wrong, you could quickly throw it in the fireplace or out the window. If something caught fire, you could quickly put it in the fireplace. Whereas if it's in the back of the room and something goes horribly wrong, you don't have many options.
You know, it's interesting because people who have their own little specialties often film gets ruined for them. So like if you're somebody like I do martial arts. So every time I watch a sword fight in a movie, I'm just like, well, that's crap. And I used to really enjoy them, but now it's just something that I complain about to people. Do you have that now? Like every time you just watch it, you're just like, well, that's a terrible place for the, you know, the fireplace poker. That's not where that goes, and that's not a gasogene. And what are you people?
Well,
doing?
Yeah, it starts chipping away at the reality when you enter someone else's reality to this period, whether it's a film or a book or a play. You want to be immersed in that. It's an entry point to a time 100, 120 years ago. And as soon as you start chipping away at that, I go absolutely nuts watching the Robert Downey films, the Sitting Room.
Oh, but
windows,
but they're so
back.
Much fun.
I mean, just the character's fun. Some of the decor is fun, but the physicality of the room, all wrong.
So you care literally more about the room than you do about the characters.
I care how the characters interact with the room. How they would have to interact. And if I may propose a scenario.
Right.
You may.
I may.
Go on.
I will.
Yes, do.
A lady client shows up at the door. She's on the escort. Perhaps Mrs. Hudson has taken her to the door of the sitting room. The door swings open. There's Holmes. He may or may not be in a dressing gown. He may or may not have a waistcoat on. And here's this frightened young woman standing there. Mm. And she knows it's improper. Now she has to walk into the room. She's in a bustled gown, which is difficult to negotiate in any space. She's corseted. She can't lean over. Her maneuverability is extremely limited, and she's looking for a place to sit down. And one of the things she notices is none of the furnishings match. Why would we care today? But in the Victorian age, furniture was sold in sets. You had a settee, you had an armchair, you had a side chair, and you had smaller side chairs, and they all matched. And those furnishings communicated to the rest of society your position in society and your aspirations. A sitting room was used to welcome guests, but now none of the furnishings match, which is kind of a decorating no-no. It suggests that the person's room is occupied by someone who might be a little, erratic and beyond the norm. They're looking for a place to sit. And one of the things that always mystified me when I would see Victorian room recreations is the number of chairs. And I couldn't quite reconcile it until I read an account that when a lady would enter a room and a gentleman would rise, he would never offer her his chair. Why? Because it retained his body heat. She would have to be offered a fresh chair. And here's this lady. She's standing there. She's looking for a place to sit. There's dishes, there's papers, there's tobacco strewn everywhere. Where's she going to sit? What's she going to sit on? And for an audience in Doyle's day, reading that a woman has entered Holmes's room, even before the story gets started, you're sitting there reading that going, oh my gosh, this woman is in trouble. And she needs Holmes's help. Now, that's the kind of insight that I was able to gain only by recreating the sitting room and sitting in it and imagining the different characters walking through the room, how the room was used, because the room was not only a sitting room. It was Holmes's office. It was the room that he did some of his experiments in. It was the room that he received clients in. It was the room that he dined in. Sitting rooms simply weren't used like this in that age. So you start layering in all these different contexts. And when I've given presentations on the room at various societies, one of the nicest comments I typically get is some Sherlockian coming up to me afterwards and saying, "My gosh, I have to reread the stories. I didn't realize that dynamic. I didn't realize that that was going on, just bubbling under the surface." So that's...
What do you think was bubbling under the surface in terms of them using that room? Like, is there...
I think it's really interesting, the idea that the contemporary readership would have recognized a kind of desperation in the client that a modern readership doesn't identify simply because we don't recognize the social construct of the physical space. That's fascinating.
No, we don't. If you can imagine...
He says vacillation on the sidewalk always means a love affair, right? So that already is completely disgraceful.
You're going to have a situation 100 years from now when someone is reading a novel that was written in 2016, where they open it and they go, "We walked into the great room and the flat screen was on." And they look at each other and they say, "What's a great room? What's a flat screen?" All these little bits and pieces of information are lost. And one of the things that I did here at the room was there is a soundtrack in the room. I went to a recording studio and spent an afternoon with some technicians. We put together a soundtrack of Victorian street sounds. And it plays in the room, and you hear footsteps, you hear carriages, you hear people talking on the street, you hear church bells, there's a thunderstorm.
Like, for example, do, 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 do,
do, do. Maybe not as elegantly done as that, but yes. And it fleshes out the experience. You can sit in there and you're hearing these sounds in the background. It really helps flesh it out.
So what value do people take away from being able to do that?
I think it's almost like an opportunity to time travel. And
okay, but you're time traveling kind of theoretically to a time that it's a problematic time.
It is a problematic time by our standards. I certainly wouldn't want to go back to that time. I mean, there are people that do. And I think, when you talk to a lot of Sherlockians, they say, I wish I could go back to visit that. Even
to visit 1895, like...
Yeah, 1895, 1900. I'd like to go back and experience that for just a moment.
Are they older white men?
Are they old? Well, I'm an older white man.
I know. 1895 is pretty good if you're an older white man. Not so good if you're anybody else. Sorry, a snarky side comment.
No, it's true.
Well, and it's a reality.
Yes.
And I think that's something that contemporary audiences have put in. And I think, it becomes a matter of, well, how harshly are we going to judge someone from 120 years ago? Holmes himself is a very, I think, modern fellow that we can relate to. And I think
I could not agree with you more. Holmes is a very modern fellow.
I think I'm sorry, but that's why I love in the Sherlock episode, The Abominable Bride, we get that moment where we almost might think that it's the Victorian Holmes imagining to the modern. Because I think we, on our podcast and with other Sherlockians, we have an endless conversation about whether, it's about people, like you're saying, a lot of people do like the idea of reenacting and kind of imagining that they're going back. But there's also that idea of a man out of his time, a man who lives in a Victorian room, but is very bohemian in some ways. And he's almost a man who's looking ahead to our time. So I think it's very interesting for us to be looking through the keyhole into his rooms, and maybe for him to be looking out of the keyhole of that same room into the modern world.
Do you have any other questions?
I don't think so. I think that that's a great, that's sort of a great button, what we're talking about here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And let the future button be the one that you push to visit 221B Baker Street, Los Angeles, where you'll be able to take that tour. You'll be able to enter the room. I've tried to make it as accurate as possible. I do have limitations. It is in a modern track house that was built in 1957, so I do have limitations there, but I've tried to make it as immersive an experience as possible, and I hope it's one that will inspire others to do a corner or a wall or maybe their own room, and certainly inspire others as they put pen to paper and write their own accounts.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 221?